Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast on a Monday morning, and Trevor Sikkema is alongside me to kick off a new week, to kick off the midseason. This is the midseason of the NFL, and we're looking ahead to the 2018 draft all year round, as we always are, Trevor. But at the same time, we have to give our due to a lot of the rookies who have performed really well to this point, and maybe look back briefly at our evaluations of them and what surprised us, what hasn't so far for this season. It's been a really fruitful start for the rookie class from the 2017 group. It seems like every year rookies are starting to get more and more involved early on. This year certainly hasn't been an exception, I think we're having one of the better offensive rookie of the year races to start off the season in between Deshaun Watson and Kareem Hunt.
Yeah, no, I know, I agree with you. This stuff starts to put a lot of pressure on GMs, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, if you see these rookies, because back in the day with GMs, it was sure about talent evaluation with players and giving guys ample time, you know, to either sit or learn the game or just, you know, acclimate to the speed and what the NFL is compared to different to college. But now, man, when we see these rookies playing really well, it's fun for us, sure, to watch. But this puts a ton of pressure on GMs who, like, almost have to kind of hit the lottery-ish with some of these guys who might play or contribute or something sooner than you might think. Because in the rest of the NFL, GMs are hitting that lottery with some mm-hmm. of these players. And, I mean, starting off just with the quarterback position, I know this little all rookie team that you and I are going to do today, it might be boring to some people because you and I, we kind of have the same guys, but it's because the domination at the top. I mean, what Deshaun Watson is doing as a rookie, mm-hmm. nobody else can be even close to the all rookie quarterback, you know?
Right.
This guy, it's crazy. And even you and I both had him as our quarterback one. Mm-hmm. And I think that we both kind of hung our hat with Deshaun Watson with the same kind of thing. It's that we watched Deshaun Watson play college football for 2.5, almost 3 years, and play some of the biggest games that this stage could offer. And every single time he played one of these big games, he was up to the challenge. Never got rattled. Was mentally a leader, both mm-hmm. in his performance and getting the most out of his players in other areas.
Right.
He was clearly smart in college with how he scouted people, and that was just, you know, while being a student athlete. And I know that they have plenty of time breaks to do all that kinds of stuff, and it's basically like a job. But still, I mean, you know, you're weighing a schedule, you're going up against important opponents. It's basically like you're in a job interview for 3 straight years, and the whole time Deshaun Watson just seemed like above the shoulders, he had it all. And there were guys in last year's class, you know, Patrick Mahomes, even Mitch Trubisky, and hey, you know, Deshaun Kizer too, that had better arms than Deshaun Watson did. Mm-hmm. But above the shoulders, what really matters for a quarterback, you know, especially when you see guys like, you know, Tom Brady, Matt Ryan, you know, even like Eli Manning, these guys who don't have the greatest arms, but sometimes, you know, when it all clicks for them upstairs, they can put together wins, they can make deep playoff runs, and they can be a good quarterback in this league. And that's what I saw in Deshaun Watson. And even I am shocked at how well he is putting it on early on. But it's been so much fun to watch him just go from such a tactician mentally from Clemson and just going straight into the NFL.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we expected him to come out and be good, but I don't know if we expected him to come out and be like the guy that's carrying his team right now. I mean, the Texans defense is horrible right now, and they were great last year. But losing J.J. Watt and especially Whitney Mercilus, I think, who was a key catalyst for them last year, this just hasn't been a great group. And also losing Cushing, and I think Dylan Cole's been banged up, who played well in his absence. So they've had a lot of injuries. They don't run the ball particularly well. The offensive line hasn't been good this season. And Deshaun Watson just doesn't matter. I mean, his ability to throw vertically and challenge teams down the field and hit big plays, I mean, to me, that's been the most surprising part, because I loved Watson coming out. I did not think he'd step in and be, like I said, the guy that puts the team on his back year one, and makes all these plays down the field. I mean, even at Clemson, like, you know, there was some, I could understand people that had issues with his deep ball and the consistency there, but man, he's been, absolutely lights out for Houston. And I think more than anything, his ability to create outside of structure, because he has to all the time behind that offensive line. He just has the natural gifts to play the position, and his athleticism such a weapon, but also his mind. I mean, it's so yeah.
Sometimes you can't overthink it, right?
It's so true. Yeah, I really think that's what Deshaun Watson was. Like, if you ended up being down on him, you overanalyze. And sometimes, I'm not even like saying that as a rip. It's more like sometimes it really is just that obvious. Like the guy, I mean, the guy had all everybody loved the intangibles. Everybody loved, the way that he carried himself in big games and things like that. And this was a huge game. And I mean, he destroyed Seattle's pass defense. I mean, just diced him up all game long. And even when he was under pressure, and yeah, it was probably one of the best performances of this season. It was probably one of the best games this season that I've seen. Those two, he and Russell Wilson going back and forth, was absolely unbelievable. I don't know if did you get to watch that game, or you were covering the Bucs game, huh?
Well, that game was at 4 o'clock, right. So I was, I was getting my work done. They had it on the TV, so I was getting to see a little bit of it here and there. Didn't get to see a lot of it, like, with the volume on or the commentary or anything like that, but I kept seeing those scores go blow for blow, and, high praise to Deshaun Watson, man. It's been so much fun to watch him.
And we're nowhere near that point, and I don't want to, push that point at all or anything like that, because it's so early, but I do think that we are going to it's going to be asked in the offseason if Watson continues this, and if we don't see Mahomes, just because people will get anxious, which I don't think we will see Mahomes probably at the rate things are going. And with Mitch Trubisky, especially, people are going to start asking, did the Chiefs make the wrong decision in taking those guys ahead of Deshaun Watson? And especially, I think we've already seen, did the Browns make the wrong decision to move back and not take Deshaun Watson at number 12? Where they could have. So
that's the only one that I look at, right, and I go, yeah, you should have taken it.
Because though Trubisky been great, I don't really think nothing's on him there. Like, what's that?
I don't really think that with Mahomes. I think Mahomes went to the perfect spot. And I think the Chiefs are happy that they got Mahomes too.
I think they will be, yeah. But I think there'll be a level of uncertainty from fans that causes to question it, even though that'll be way premature in my opinion.
The Browns, yeah.
Right.
That was bad. That was bad.
I mean, I think you and I said this all along, but when we were doing mock drafts for the Browns, and it was the what we should do mock drafts, it was Myles Garrett and it was Deshaun Watson. Go change your franchise. What it was. It really wasn't too complicated beyond that. And they did what the Browns always do. But Deshaun Watson looks like a keeper for the long term.
I mean, I didn't hate what they did,
Yeah, I mean, the first round was fine.
You get a guy who might have a huge high ceiling in Peppers, and then you get Njoku, and you end up getting that fourth quarterback. And so I like what they did. And like on draft day, I looked at it and I was like, man, that could be not just a home run. That might be a grand slam of a draft class if it all comes together. But right now, makes it tough when you're sitting here watching Watson and you're 0-8. So
yeah, and the just keeps bringing us back to the point, and this is why teams reach for quarterbacks, because none of it matters if you don't have a quarterback. I mean, it just doesn't matter. The Browns, maybe that's accentuated because the rest of the roster isn't great either, but I still think it's true. It doesn't make any difference if they can't find that guy that's going to lead the turnaround. Maybe it is Kaiser eventually. He wasn't horrible against Minnesota, but he picking Deshaun Watson for our quarterback for the all-rookie team is probably the easiest call we'll make on this podcast all year. He's in a knockdown, drag-out fight with Kareem Hunt for Offensive Rookie of the Year right now. I can't even believe I'm saying that, but Watson's been so good. I mean, it just looked like there was no way anyone was going to be able to match. I mean, Kareem Hunt's been absolutely ridiculous. He's 11 plays of 20 yards or more as a receiver or rusher. He has 4 plays of 40 yards or more. He's averaging almost 6 yards per carry. He has 717 yards rushing and leads the league as a rookie. And the Chiefs aren't where they are without him. And he plays tonight, and it'll be another great opportunity to see him, because I think he'll add to his already leading the league in rushing total. But I just look at Kareem Hunt, and I think this guy has landed in the perfect situation, obviously, but he has special ability because it's so difficult to get him on the ground. And I just think that's going to continue. Like, that's not like a flash in the pan thing. That's his balance, his power, his running style, you know, his burst to challenge tackling angles. I just think he's going to be a stud for a long time in the NFL.
Yeah, no, you know, we were spoiled with Ezekiel Elliott last year. We're still spoiled with Ezekiel Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
Now we get it this year with Kareem Hunt and plenty of other guys too. I know you wanted to jump into this, but I mean, like, you know, what Leonard Fournette is doing so early, not a lot of us predicted. What Dalvin Cook was doing, if Dalvin Cook was still healthy, he'd be right up there too.
Yeah, that's the thing. Exactly. I think you're right. So, Dalvin Cook would be, I thought he was playing better than Fournette early on. Now, the last couple of games, Fournette's really caught fire. I mean, it's an unbelievable running back class. Where Aaron Jones for Green Bay has started, like, what, three games? He's been phenomenal. I mean, he's averaging 5.6 yards a carry. He's scored three times. I think he has 200-yard games. You know, Joe Mixon starting to flash now. As receivers, Alvin Kamara, Tariq Cohen, Christian McCaffrey, they've all given their offense another element. Marlon Mack has not gotten enough touches, but given his offense another element. Chris Carson won the starting job in Seattle and was playing well, averaging over 4 yards a carry before he was injured. Might be back still, I think, by the end of the season. But, I mean, just an impressive group all the way around. And I know we're picking guys at the top, and I think at this point with Cook's injury – and the fact that Aaron Jones is kind of just getting started here, and same for Joe Mixon, it's pretty easy to pick Hunt and Leonard Fournette right now. But I think the one thing that gets lost in all this, and we've talked about a little bit, is how much do you start overthinking? And again, we're talking about overthinking, and we're halfway through these guys' rookie season. So we're talking about narratives that could be out there, not necessarily that we're condemning anything. But I do think you look at Carolina's selection of Christian McCaffrey in the running back depth that was in this class and what McCaffrey's currently doing as a rusher, which is basically nothing. I think he's averaging like just over 2 yards per carry. Yeah, 2.4 yards per carry. It's been a real rough start for McCaffrey in his first 50 carries. And we obviously have a long way to go, and Carolina's offensive line isn't great. But I think you do start to look back and question the pick a little bit and say, did this guy represent the proper value that we should have gotten at this point in the draft? I know you like McCaffrey.
Yeah.
He's going to be a good player. I know you like McCaffrey. He's going to be a good player. I just think when you look at the full value of what they could have gotten at that point in the draft, you know, you could have addressed a more important position, or you could have gotten a every down player.
What running backs did they pick? McCaffrey was the second running back pick, correct?
Correct, yeah, after Fournette.
I mean, if they take Dalvin Cook, their team is better.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Or wait until the second round and take someone.
Obviously, if they take Kareem Hunt, the team is better. But, like, you can't really say that because even, like, we all, like, everybody in the scouting community, I think Kareem Hunt was basically, like, RB5 for almost everybody.
Yeah, it was RB5 or 7 or whatever. Somewhere in there, yeah, without much distinction.
Nobody saw him doing what he is doing. Because if they did, he would have been everybody's RB1, but he wasn't. So that's a little unfair to say. But, yeah, I mean, if they would have picked Alvin Cook, the Carolina Panthers would be better off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Certainly. And, I mean, McCaffrey killed the Bucs yesterday. I was out covering the game, the Carolina-Tampa game.
Yeah, he did well as a receiver.
Right, but rushing. I mean, the Bucs just decided not to cover him, so that normally
but
helps.
You can look at Cohen and Kamara and Mac, and you can find those guys to fill that role later.
Right. It's definitely a value thing. You know, but I will say with McCaffrey, the reason why you have some of those plays where it looks like he's wide open and nobody's covering him, and, you know, a lot of fans get mad, they're just like, why isn't anybody covering that guy? Well, the reason is because McCaffrey is so dang good that you can't put a linebacker on him. Mm. You know, like he'll burn him every time. So what you have to do is you have to play zone, and you have to hope that you close a zone quick enough on McCaffrey to where you kind of like either warrant a no throw, or at least you stop him pretty early. That's how you cover him, because no linebacker is going to cover Christian McCaffrey. It's just a death wish. So that when you talk about that in the grand scheme of things and being able to get that element into an offense, it certainly has a place and it has worth and value. And the rest of the offense could be elevated because of something like that, you know, because of an element like that where you force a defense to play man or zone, or at least like the linebackers to play zone. So then you can manipulate it in different ways. And so there are tons of layers to the game of football. But in terms of kind of direct correlation production, yes, I think that they could have gotten value better somewhere else, especially because they picked Curtis Samuel next.
Bizarre, so, isn't it?
You know, I understand what they were thinking. Like, oh, we'll have Christian McCaffrey, and then if McCaffrey ever has to go out or we want to use him a different way, we can just throw Samuel in that more basic McCaffrey role, and that'll still be there, and then McCaffrey gets to be another mismatch somewhere else. But football doesn't really work like that.
Also, Curtis Samuel's really not that good, so.
But his skill set is, ish the same.
So why double up? It was so weird.
It was you would have to have a seriously creative offensive mind who is kind of almost like revolutionary-ish to be able to get that in the NFL. That works in college. You can get tons of gadget players in college and move the ball down the field, but
you can legitimately argue, and I know we're belaboring the point maybe here because it's so early, but Kamara and Cohen, you can legitimately argue that each of them have been better than McCaffrey and Samuel combined and what they've been able to produce. And part of that is Carolina's offense. I don't think they're quite – they don't have quite the system to use those guys. Now, I think they are trying to adapt some things and use those guys better. And McCaffrey, as we move on to receivers, if we're picking receivers, McCaffrey might be the number one rookie receiver. Right now, he's dominating in terms of production. He leads all rookies in catches with 49. The next closest player is Kamara with 31. But McCaffrey only averaging 7.5 yards per catch, and Kamara's up over that, and Tariq Cohen's up over that. And so it kind of goes back to our point, and Kareem Hunt's way over those guys. It goes back to our point a little bit, but at the same time, McCaffrey being targeted a ton, I think he set the Panthers' single season record for receptions by a running back already, which obviously the Panthers have never really thrown to running backs, which is one of the things that made the McCaffrey pick so interesting. Is that there's really not much of a history of the Panthers using running backs in that way, even before.
He doesn't fit what they're doing right now, because the Panthers are, you could even see it with flashes yesterday. Mm-hmm. The Panthers want to be this power run team, run the ball, and then they want to be this play action, take deep shots team, because Cam Newton must have taken somewhere between eight and ten passes of beyond 30 yards that game, where he just loads up and lets it fly. And, that's fine, but they're a power run to play action to deep shot kind of a team. That's what offense they are. Where does Christian McCaffrey fit in there? He doesn't.
Right.
Yeah, you know?
It's a weird fit.
That's why during the offseason they said, well, we almost have a separate playbook for Christian McCaffrey. That's not good, dude.
Yeah. Fit him into everything you're doing already.
That's not this. Oh wow, look at this revolutionary offense they're going to have when McCaffrey's on the field. It's going to be no. Now you have completely two different offensive philosophies. You're trying to run in one team, which normally just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I think that's why we're seeing so many strange games from Carolina, is because sometimes those big plays are hitting for them, and then just sometimes it's not, and they have this kind of stagnant short pass game with McCaffrey all game thing.
It's weird. Their offense is not clicking on all cylinders, and that's part of it. But receivers.
Getting to receivers.
Right. Juju Smith-Schuster, easily been the best receiver so far.
And no one else.
It really isn't. And he has 24 catches. He almost had a 200-yard receiving game last night, so his numbers are buoyed by that. But even in Pittsburgh's offense, he'd already scored 3 times going into last night. You know, now his numbers across the season look even better. He has 424 yards on the year, averaging almost 18 yards a catch. Has 4 touchdowns, 5 plays of 20 yards or more, 2 of 40 yards or more. You know, he's been able to be somewhat of a big play guy for a team that really hasn't had much of that element this season. So he's brought a great dimension to Pittsburgh. He's been awesome. Also, as a blocker, been awesome. After that, man, it falls off a cliff. I mean, Cooper Kupp's the only other even mildly productive receiver right now, and he has 23 catches for 316 yards. He does have 3 touchdowns. I've watched him drop at least 2 other touchdowns. I've watched him drop probably 4, 5, maybe 6 passes this season. So been very uneven for Kupp, I think, so far this year. But he's in a perfect offense for him. You know, he's a type of receiver that Goff will click with and develop chemistry with, and it seems like that's happened at least. I know you and I were not crazy about Kupp. I had a 4th-round grade on him. I think he's played probably a little above that at this point, and he's been pretty decent there. He's made some mistakes too, and he's coming along. But again, we're not talking about any type of receiving talent in this draft really showing out at this point, other than maybe Juju recently. Because, I mean, guys like Taywan Taylor and Mac Hollins have flashed, but Zay Jones has done very, very little. John Ross has been injured. Corey Davis has been injured. Mike Williams has been injured. So there go, and Carlos Henderson's been injured. There's my top four wide receivers. So they barely played at all. And Mike Williams and I was just starting to get back into the swing of things. I think Corey Davis has been out since beginning of week two game, I think. And hopefully he's back soon. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, there's really not a lot to say, right? I mean, I don't know. Play Josh Reynolds.
Thank you.
We'll keep banging the table for that. But other than that, it's not really that the receiver class has been like really bad or anything. It's just not much to say. I mean, too many guys are hurt for it to really matter. The tight end class has been, you know, rumored three first rounders. I had three first rounders. OJ Howard's had, a slower start as a receiver, but from what I've seen and you've seen close up, you know, three touchdowns, 13 catches, 221 yards, been a red zone weapon. And Njoku has three touchdowns and an offense that is absolutely anemic. He's made some unbelievable highlight reel plays. Evan Engram's been the best tight end, in my opinion, 30 catches, 342 yards. The Giants have not used him really that well. Every other weapon on the Giants has been hurt. So now he is the guy in the passing offense as a rookie tight end who's not being even used in all the ways that he could best be used. So it's a very interesting role right now for Evan Engram. I mean, if you're opposing teams, you almost want to put your best corner on Evan Engram because are you worried about Travis Rudolph or Roger Lewis? You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's just a weird spot for Evan Engram. He's been great when I've watched him. Regardless of that, he has five catches of 20 yards or more. If you can get that type of big play production out of the tight end position, I mean, that's really impressive stuff. He's tied with Juju for most among rookies in that regard as receivers. So he's the guy for me, but I think this has been a good start for considering all the things that are going on. And George Kittle's had a nice start to the season as well. And been a pretty nice start for the tight end class.
Yeah, I mean, everybody wanted O.J. Howard to be this, like, world beater, and he just wasn't going to be on the Tampa offense. So he's been fine. Njoku's been better than I thought. But, yeah, hey, I mean, production-wise.
What's that supposed to be? Did you not like Njoku?
No, I did.
You thought it'd be a slow start.
But I thought it would be a slower start because I didn't think that Njoku was necessarily like a polished tight end by any means, certainly like in line or with routes. I just thought that obviously he was hyper athletic and that definitely showed out in college, and that's fun, and that's something that you bet on when you draft him, where you do is that you hope you continue to get that athleticism as you kind of like fine tune and like crisp out the rest of his game. You hope the athleticism stays there through it all. But I thought that athleticism would get somewhat lost right away in the NFL because he won with athleticism so easily in college at a position where sometimes it's tough to do that. Mm-hmm. So I thought like with the spacing getting smaller, with coverage getting better, with guys getting faster and stronger, I thought that he would kind of get pushed around and maybe lost the mix a little bit. But he's doing a nice job of still using the athleticism to get open, get separation, all that kinds of stuff. So that's what I mean by that.
Yeah. So I think it's been a promising start for a tight end class. Not a ton of production to be seen yet, but I don't think that's unexpected. I don't remember a lot in the last time we saw a tight end really just dominate as a rookie or anything like that. But those guys have been good, I think, to start the season. The offensive line class, it's been a weird start. I mean, this wasn't the deepest offensive line group to begin with. And I think at tackle, you have clear front runners for the top spots in Cam Robinson and Garrett Bowles. And Ryan Ramczyk's even played better of late. I think he's playing on the right side for the Saints. And I've heard he's played better of late. Haven't seen him. Bowles hasn't been perfect. He's given up some pressure to power, but he's far better than anything else the Broncos have had at offensive tackle for a while. And his mentality and athleticism, I think, help him make a lot of plays that maybe his technique isn't perfect on. But Cam Robinson, to me, has been the best offensive lineman. He's been absolutely outstanding for the Jaguars in the run game, creating movement and pass protection, using his hands. He's been physical. He's been aggressive. He's processed quickly. I think he looks like a future star for Jacksonville. They look like they got two studs at the top of their draft class. And if D.D. Westbrook comes back, it'd be another element. How about the Jaguars trading for Marcell Dareus, by the way? Did you see that?
Studs.
Unbelievable, dude. If Dareus cares...
How did Tom Coughlin organize his teams to beat the Patriots when they beat him? Oh, defensive line. Guess what he's doing in Jacksonville.
Okay, I see it. I see what they're building. I don't think they're going to beat the Patriots, but probably need somebody other than Blake B for that. But I don't know. He balled out last time he played. Forrest Lamp got hurt. That was a huge blow to this class.
That sucks because yeah. Forrest Lamp's great.
Oh my gosh, you've
Chargers are cursed, man. If you're a Chargers fan, I'm sorry.
I know, sucks. Pat Elflein
What if the Chargers, in like a streak of good luck for once, somehow got in a position to where they could draft Nick Bosa, so they had both Boses?
Oh my gosh, I'm trying to think of how they would even.
I mean, I'd be a Chargers fan.
Yeah. I mean, I already kind of am because I love him and Engram. I mean, it's a blast to watch them, and Chris McCain's coming on. I just don't even know how they get all those guys on the field. It'd be overkill at that point. But Nick Bosa is going to be
watching,
awesome.
I was watching the end of that Ohio State Penn State game,
mm-hmm.
and Nick Bosa is unbelievable.
Oh yeah, he's an absolute stud.
For a what? What is he? 20 years old?
Yeah, 1920.
So when the score was 39-38, Penn State, they had Andre Holmes, Lewis Hubbard, and Bosa on the field.
Jalen Holmes.
Oh yeah, sorry. And they would double Nick Bosa. I think they doubled Nick Bosa on all four of their snaps, their last snaps in that series, and I think he beat the double every single time.
Jeez, I'm going to have to watch it. Remember, I was at a wedding, so.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No, it's like, okay.
The hand usage is so violent.
Oh, my gosh. Their hand usage is unbelievable. Like, it's like all they did was work on a bag their whole lives and, you know, just practice pass rush moves. It's
you know what we got to do? You know what? You know what the Bucks got to do to get some sacks?
They got to get Nick Bosa in 2 years. That's what they
have to do. No, they got to call up Papa Bosa and have him coach.
Right. Just bring him in.
Start feeding him whatever he fed those Bosa kids. So
I don't know if they might be in the barn for as big as they're going to get anyway at this point. Maybe Noah's beds could bulk up a little, become a power rusher.
After I watched that game, I texted a friend of mine and said, the government needs to step in and demand that the Bosa family continue to procreate.
It's for the greater good.
It is. It really is.
Speaking of Ohio State, Pat Elflein's been pretty solid this season for Minnesota. Deion Dawkins has been more down than up. There hasn't been a lot of major contributions. Ethan Posick stepped in yesterday for Seattle. I heard good things. Nice. I didn't have an eye on him. I didn't realize he was out there till after the game. Other than that, man, it's been rough sledding. The Ravens have had to play a couple guys. Jermaine Illuminor has had to play, but it wasn't pretty when I watched. I saw Julian Davenport have to play some for Houston. It hasn't been a whole lot. I know Danny Isadora started a game yesterday. Chase Relier started a game yesterday. A couple of late round guys, fifth and sixth rounders. I had to start because of injury. Haven't seen enough of them to really be able to say, but it's been, there has not been probably even enough offensive linemen to actually form a full team at this point. So we kind of forewent that and just kind of mentioned a couple of the names off the top that have played really well. But there's been limited contributions, I think, or limited positive contributions anyway, by offensive linemen so far. But still, a good start to the year for most rookie offensive players, I think. A few of the hot topic buttons we discussed out there surrounding the rookie class. Tomorrow, we dive into the defensive group and we pick our all rookie defensive teams. And that should probably be a little more interesting because we'll have a little more variety to our picks. There's been a lot of edge rushers exploded yesterday and had sacks, and the production starting to pick up for those guys. We've had some impressive linebackers. We've had some DBs that have straight up changed the game for their teams this season that we'll mention as well. So good stuff coming up later on the podcast. Wednesday, we have funerals for the teams that are now at this point officially out of it. We're at the midway point of the season. It's time to say goodnight to some NFL teams, start to look ahead to their draft needs in anticipation for the 2018 NFL draft. If you're a fan of the teams we'll talk about Wednesday, just stop all your other podcasts, disengage from the rest of your team season, and come with Trev and I on the wild journey to the 2018 NFL Draft. Until then, you keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.